Enjoy your day and have some fun. We're not here to do what's already been done. Open your eyes, try something new on for size. Go on and let yourself be heard. It's a great big world.
Welcome to the fifth episode of Great Big World. It's been a long time in coming. If you're just joining us for the first time, welcome. I'm Jeremio, and I'm your host. If you're coming back and you've listened to some other episodes previously, welcome back. I'm sorry it's been so long. It's good to be here and talking to you again. We're going to be scaling back on the world news segment of Great Big World due to the lack of free and copyright-free world news out there, but we will be continuing our other segments, and let's go ahead and get on with the show. In our United Nations update today, we look at the work of the International Atomic Energy Agency, known by its abbreviation IAEA. The goal of this organization is to promote the peaceful use of nuclear energy and to restrict the use of nuclear energy for military purposes. It was set up in 1957 and originally called the Atoms for Peace Organization. I think this name was given to it by President Dwight Eisenhower, although I have to say I do prefer the current moniker, IAEA. The headquarters of the IAEA are in Vienna, Austria, and they have scientific research facilities in Siebersdorf, which is near Vienna, in Vienna itself, in Monaco, and in Trieste, Italy. They also have regional offices in Vienna, Geneva, New York City, Toronto, and Tokyo. There are 2,200 staff members from more than 90 countries that work for the IAEA, and it has a budget of about 275 million euro. This is no small mom-and-pop organization. The UN has mandated the IAEA to inspect and investigate suspected violations of the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, but the organization has no teeth itself. Like many UN bodies, it can only report to the UN Security Council, which, as we've talked about before, is where the real power of the UN lies. The Security Council can then take action against nations deemed to be in violation of the will of the United Nations. The IAEA is led by Egyptian Mohamed El-Baradei, and he will be the Director General at least until 2009. The previous Director General, you may remember his name from the build-up to the Iraq War, was Hans Blix. But El-Baradei is currently the Director General. The organization is governed by a 35-nation Board of Governors. These consist of diplomats from 35 different countries, elected annually at the General Conference of the IAEA, which happens in September. There are 139 countries that are member states of the International Atomic Energy Agency, and that does include the nation of Iran, but not North Korea, interestingly. The agency and El-Baradei were awarded the Nobel Peace Prize last year in 2005, and during his acceptance speech, El-Baradei noted that if we spent only 1% of the money that we currently spend on developing new weapons, we could feed the hungry throughout the world. In our country focus today, we look at the nation of Pakistan, and on the line with me is Ahmed. Ahmed, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Now, Ahmed, you don't currently live in Pakistan, but you are Pakistani. Can you tell me what part of the country you live in?
I live in the city called Lahore. It's the provincial capital of the province called Punjab. There are four provinces, basically, and Punjab is one of them. And Lahore is the provincial capital of that province. I live in Lahore.
So what kind of size of city are we talking about? Is it 500,000, 1 million, more?
5 million people are currently living there, approximately.
Wow, that is a lot of people. Is it the largest city in Pakistan?
No, Karachi is the largest. Karachi, which is in the south and which is the seaport, that is the largest. That has more than 10 million people. Lahore is not the largest, but it is one of the biggest cities.
If I remember my geography correctly, the capital is Islamabad. How far is that from Lahore, and how many people does that city hold?
You're right. Islamabad is the capital, and it's 350 kilometers away from Lahore. I'm not sure about the population, but it is quite few people compared to Lahore. Must be less than half of Lahore.
I also have a question for you about the government of Pakistan. I often see General Pervez Musharraf on the news as the leader of Pakistan. How did he come to be the leader?
It's a really difficult question to answer for me because I have not much interest in politics. He became a leader like all the other leaders previously became leaders in their time. I don't think people in our country are, you can say, they're not educated enough to focus on these things and to have a say on these things. So politicians keep rolling balls according to their own, you know, their own timing and their own turns. It's like that. Circumstances in the country don't change. There has not been any significant change in the way the people are living since 1947 when this country was liberated from the British.
Was General Musharraf democratically elected? Is he the president of the country?
No.
All right, moving on to a different topic. I want to ask you a little bit about the history of Pakistan. You said that it became independent in 1947. What were the circumstances at that time?
Subcontinent of India was being ruled by the British at that time, and in 1947 it was divided into two separate countries. One was Pakistan and the other is what we today know as India.
Why were India and Pakistan divided after 1947?
Primarily it was because of religion. It was a religious divide, as far as I can understand. Muslim dominant areas were given to Pakistan and Hindu dominant areas were added to India.
I know that you've traveled a little bit, Ahmed, in the Muslim world. How would you say that the Islam that's practiced in Pakistan is different or the same as Islam in other parts of the Muslim world?
Unfortunately, Islam as it is being practiced in Pakistan and in India, it is completely different from the real and true teachings of Islam. And we can say, for example, it is completely different from Islam being practiced in Saudi Arabia, in UAE, in Kuwait, and in other Gulf countries. They have because Muslims have been living with Hindus and other several different religions for more than 1,000 years in what we call today Pakistan. Therefore, it's not the religion is not in its original form over there at the moment.
What are some unique aspects of Pakistani culture? What things would be considered uniquely Pakistani?
It could be their dress, it could be food, and uniquely Pakistani. Again, we can't use the word unique because culturally we are still very similar to India. A lot of celebrations are same, festivals are same. There is, I don't think, anything unique in Pakistan which you can't see in India. It's mostly overlapping.
Can you tell me a kind of food that you enjoy that's traditional Pakistani food?
Yeah, there are different kinds of food, mostly rice and some curries made with mutton, beef or chicken. Biryani is a type of rice, chicken biryani, which is a recipe for chicken and rice together. It's a good one. I like that one.
If someone were to visit Pakistan and asked you which places they should definitely hit on a 1 or 2 week trip, where would you tell them to go?
Before 8th of October, I would have told them to go to the north because that's so beautiful. But in the earthquake that hit the northern areas of Pakistan on 8th October last year, now the north is not is an appropriate place to be visited by a foreigner, but still it's the most beautiful part.
Popular areas exist for tourists.
There are some historical places in Lahore, some history in a place called Taxla near Rawalpindi, and the Valley of Sawat is worth visiting for those who are interested in history of Buddhism, and in Karachi. Also, you can see some museums and there is seaside. It's like that.
Well, Ahmed, thank you very much for joining us today on Great Big World. We appreciate you stopping by.
Thank you very much.
Our spotlight today is on the virtual world known as Second Life. If you haven't heard of Second Life, you've got to check it out. It is one of the neatest things I've ever seen, and I can say without hyperbole that it is probably the next step for the Internet. It currently has more than 170,000 users. It's growing by leaps and bounds every month. It's somewhat hard to describe, but let me tell you about some experiences that I've had in this virtual world. I've built buildings, including a museum dedicated to Esperanto. I've gone shopping for clothes and vehicles. I've taken part in an immigration protest. I have seen simulations of Venice and ancient Rome. I've played in game shows, and I've met lots of new friends, among many, many other experiences. In fact, this world is so engaging and so real, and there's even an economy inside of it, that there are a number of people who make their living in the real world by building and creating objects, or by selling land in the world of Second Life. The stated goal of Linden Labs, which is behind Second Life, is to create a world where people can interact, play, do business, and otherwise communicate. And in an interview with Wired magazine, founder Philip Rosedale famously said, "I'm not building a game, I'm building a new country." It's hard to believe, it's hard to explain, but I do hope you'll check it out. And if you do find your way into Second Life, which you can reach by going to the website secondlife.com, I hope that you'll contact me in the game, in the world, I don't even know what to call it. My name is Jeremio Dimsum. That's GXEREMIODIMSUM. I hope to see you there. In our language focus today, we look at the national language of Pakistan, Urdu. And we have Ahmed back with us to share some of his linguistic knowledge. Thanks again, Ahmed. Now, before we get started, I want to clarify, Urdu is the national language, but there are other languages. Is that right, Ahmed?
Yeah, Urdu is the national language, but there are several other regional languages also, like Sindhi and Punjabi and Pashto and Balochi, like that, Saraiki. But Urdu is officially the national language and most widely understood language in Pakistan.
I'll go ahead, and as I say the word, please say it after me in Urdu. Hello.
Salaam alaikum.
Thank you.
Shukriya.
Yes.
Ji.
No.
Nahi.
Goodbye.
Khuda hafiz.
Numbers 1 to 10.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
I want to thank Ahmed, and as well as my wife Lindsay, and her boss Quentin for giving me the impetus to continue and produce another episode. If you enjoy the show, please write to me, greatbigworld@gmail.com, or post a comment about the show on whatever aggregator you downloaded it from. I hope to see you soon, much sooner than it's been since our last visit together, and remind you, it's your world, know it.
It's a great big world.